You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Yes, you are. And good morning to you. A good Wednesday morning to you. The 8th day of January, 2017. And let me tell you what we're going to do on the program today. It'll be an interesting one. A buddy of mine, Mike Pesnola, is going to join us. We are going to talk about the news here. And there's a bunch of stuff in it, obviously, as there is every day these days. at times, what a headache. You know, what a headache. And I will tell you this. I think it's interesting that the nation, it appears to me, is tiring of the president and this nonsense that we see every day. And I think that a lot of people that voted for him to, with the hope that he would govern. And we're very excited in his first week when he came out with his executive orders, but the stupidity continues. And so it is what it is. You know, it is what it is. I think a lot of people had hopes that once elected, that this bullshit would stop. It clearly does not. And so, you know, the fight with the media on a daily basis over which direction's up or down, blah, 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 blah. So, anyway, that backdrop, I think as a nation, we flounder. So, we'll see what happens. Our national drama continues. So a lot of other stuff going on. Mike Pesnola going to join us. Retired colonel, United States Marine Corps. And he will, and we'll talk about that. One of the things I want to talk to Pez about is supposedly there's conflicting reports that Yemen has said, yeah, no more special operations stuff in Yemen, which would be a blow to the United States and our fight against Al-Qaeda. And I want to talk to Pez about that and the posturing that has to happen in the Arab world and how it works. So we'll get his thoughts on that. We'll also, the Marine Corps, doing some interesting stuff. The Commandant was interviewed, talked about some of his priorities in the upcoming year, and we'll ask Pez about that, get his thoughts, and were he the commandant, we'll give him the option to be queen for a day, and see what he would do. But there's a lot of stuff in the news, as you might expect, and again, there's reported both in the New York Times and the Washington Post that Yemen had withdrawn that. And then I saw a little blurb on Twitter today, that's right, on the Twitter, that said that in fact was not true, that Yemen was denying that. So I guess we'll see what's right, but Yemeni officials deny that U.S. counterterror missions have been put on hold. So that's from a former Marine that writes for the Washington Post that irritated me a few months ago, Thomas Gibbons Neff. So he's yet to redeem himself in my eyes. He ran a story after the F-18 crash in 29 Palms that irritated a lot of my aviator friends. He reported that the plane broke up in midair. Right? At night. So who told him that? He reported that the day following the crash. So that kind of speculation and bullshit doesn't help. Doesn't help. And who told him that? Somebody watching, happened to be watching the aircraft on goggles that saw it, that knew it? Come on. That's ridiculous. There's no way whoever told him that knew that. And there's no way that he got two sources to say that. And then you go out and bomb that out. And he's a former Marine. And he's supposed to be reported for the Post. Didn't particularly care for that. Anyway, he reports today. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. Yemeni officials deny the U.S. counter terror missions have been put on hold. So, you have that going for you. All of that. So we'll talk about that here as we get going. Anyway, and then after that, Dennis Simpson is going to join us. Now, Dennis is the president of Focus Marines Foundation, and they help guys with PTSD and other issues. Work in conjunction with the Wounded Warrior Regiments, and so they've been in business for a while, so we're going to talk to him and find out what they do. As we continue to emphasize the concept of post-traumatic growth. So, yeah, post-traumatic growth. The greatest generation came home from that war, and they did great stuff. So there's no reason why the guys who fought in Afghanistan, girls who fought in Afghanistan, guys is a genderless term in my vocabulary. So that the people who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan, it's not a debilitating experience. All right? Certainly is challenging, no doubt. But especially given all the help that's out there, there's no reason why this generation cannot continue in the footsteps of the greatest generation, because if you just look around, how much does the nation need us? How much does the nation need better leadership? It's a clown show. So, with all that said, time to usher in the day with the soothing sounds of our national anthem. Good morning to you. Something that we all need a large amount of these days, motivation, because I will tell you what, that whole our national theater is making me ill.
Yeah. Our flag is on through to America. my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
He so didn't mean that. That's kind of my barometer every day. Did he mean it or did he not mean it? Just a speech, sports fans. He's a politician. How do you know he's lying? His lips are moving. The Kennedys, man. They were brutal. Anyway. 62 in Quantico right now. Yeah, warming up. 66. Camp Lejeune under both of cloudy skies. Granbury, Texas, 64. And then we travel to North Dakota. 9 below right now. Come on. Is that right? Hold on. Let me double check. I think it is. And they're going to hit 30 like in about 3 days. How crazy is that? Yeah, that is in fact correct, sports fan. in North Dakota right now, it's 9 degrees below zero. 29 Palms, 55 degrees right now under sunny skies. Camp Pendleton, 56 under cloudy skies. Yeah. Camp Smith in Hawaii, 65 degrees under cloudy, dark skies. Okinawa, 63, cloudy and dark. And in Fallujah, 62. Cloudy skies, dark there, and at the home of All Marine Radio. Costa Mesa, California, here in the Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area of Orange County, 60 degrees under cloudy skies, which is nice because it's been cold here. Yeah, we do not like it. When we get in the 40s, what is that? And let me tell you the worst part of it. The houses aren't built for it, man. The insulation and stuff, heater's going all night. Brutal. All right. We're going to take a break. Mike Pezzanola is going to join us next. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, which is home of the badass Battle Mug. It starts out as 13.5-pound block of T6 billet aluminum. And after they mill it, machine it, and anodize it, it's ready for you to make your own. You could do that a couple ways. If you have it in your office, you can put a bunch of stuff on it, like I have mine sitting here. It's got the Marine Corps emblem. It's got the American flag on it. You can put unit logos, all that kind of stuff on it. How do you do that? It has Picatinny rails, just like your M4, your M16 did. So it's a great gift. Commemorative occasions, farewells, promotions, retirements, and other special occasions. Check them out at battlemug.com. Type in the promo code Marine for 15% off. Veteran-owned, Marine-owned, and made entirely in the United States of America, which we love. So, battlemug.com, great sponsor of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get Pezzanola on. We're going to talk about Yemen, their decision. We're going to talk about some stuff the Commandant's rolled out. So, all of that coming up next. Rolled into one incredible radio program right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
All I can say about militarybyowner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start. I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
As we recognize the service of America's men and women in uniform, let's also honor the families who sacrifice so much every day. Military families endure frequent deployments and separations. They carry on while their loved ones are sent into harm's way and wait patiently for their safe return. If you really want to honor a veteran, look for ways to support their families and thank them for their sacrifices. Go to legion.org/honorveterans to find out how you can help.
This is Montel Williams. As a U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran, I know the sacrifice that our servicemen and women make for us every single day. If you're a veteran or a military member transitioning out of the service, help is available to you. The U.S. Department of Labor can help you get training, find a good job, or further your education. Contact the Veterans Employment and Training Service at 866-487-2365 or visit dol.gov/vets.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Okay, hold on. I gotta get the right bumper music for this segment. So, Peds and I were having like an ongoing argument yesterday, and he was kind of pissing me off. So, let me make sure I have the right music to. Come on, man! My computer's being slow. All right. This is actually ESPN's NHL music. Yeah, so I'm minding my own business, watching the Kings get hammered by Tampa. Didn't make me happy. And Mike Pesnola, who's with us now, I see that he's at the rally in... And he throws this bomb out there like, great owner, great team, great players, what a great day, or something like that. I'm like, I don't see any mention of number 12 there, like, with any individual recognition. And so I said, yeah, you might want to mention number 12 individually. He's like, in our system, he's just another player. Exactly. So with that, I'm like, okay, Pez clearly is boozing it, okay? And so I called him this morning. I meant, come on, you got to come on. So first of all, how was the parade?
The parade was awesome. Snow, rain, millions of people there. It was awesome. It was really great to see them, and the players were certainly enjoying themselves, as were the people in the crowd. So it was good to see.
Okay, now let me tell you this. Did you break an ankle after you jumped off the bandwagon trying to get back onto it? Or did you stay on the bandwagon? Because let me tell you, there was a shot of one of the Wahlberg brothers at halftime. He was like slouched over two chairs, and you know he was just getting hammered. Like, I spent all this money for the suite to watch this blowout. What the hell just happened?
No getting off the bandwagon, but it was tough, man. But it was tough. But, you know, hey, we only need to score 16 points. That's two touchdowns, two point conversions. No problem.
Nope.
You know, but it was tough. It was, there was a lot of soul searching going on in these longtime Patriots fans. But, man, what a game.
Okay, so at what point did you know that God had changed sides?
I actually think at that point, when they could tie it up with 16 points, I really, at that point, I said, he can do this. They can freaking do this. If anyone can do it, it's the Patriots. So,
the Patriots. It's number four. It's number 12. God. He was out of his mind. So,
he was.
When Nutt made that catch, because let me tell you, Pez, and Pez knows me, right, from way back. My family's intimately familiar with God changing sides in the middle of a baseball game. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those balls hit by Kevin Mitchell and Gary Carter and Mookie Wilson all strung together don't make one line drive. Okay.
Yeah.
And with two outs and the lead and two strikes, 28 pitches got fouled off. Okay, 28 pitches got fouled off in that inning. Now, having said that, God changed sides in 1986 in the sixth game of the World Series, okay? And I recognized it. And it was partly my fault because I got up and moved seats, okay?
Yeah.
Like the owner did from Atlanta when he went down to the field. I went, oh! But when the catch got made, I went, it's over, boys. God has definitely taken a side. He's intervening.
Yeah.
And Tom Brady's infallible, and Patriots, it's this thing's over. When did you know? When did you know that God had really, really decided this for the Patriots? When they were within 16 points?
No. That's where I started. But I think where it really changed. Where it really changed was when Atlanta was ready to bury it. When Julio Jones made that catch on the 20-yard line, hey, they're gonna get a field goal. This is gonna put it out of reach. And when he held the ball and he got sacked, I said, this is it, man. This is it. Cause the freaking defense was on fire and they're gonna come back. So that was the point for me. But there was so many points. It's freaking Edelman catch. I mean, come on.
That was awesome though. That was a little divine intervention. Certainly a lot of operating at a very high skill level, but a little bit of puck luck right there too.
Absolutely. It was payback for the Tyree catch.
Pez is a hockey fan. So Tom Brady a +3 in Super Bowls, Joe Montana +4 in terms of plus or minus. Which would really make Joe Montana the better quarterback in big games, yes?
Big Joe, I told you last night, they were both in the league the same amount of years, and Tom made it 7 times. Joe only made it to 4 Super Bowls. If he made it to more, he would have won.
He's a +4. Tom's only a +3.
Hey, he only made it to 4 Super Bowls.
That's right.
He only made
that's called four. That's called boom, out go the lights, man. So you're not buying my minus argument?
I would have bought it if he didn't play as many years, but he's played exactly as many years. I think they're like exactly as many years right now. If he played less years, then I'd say, okay, he didn't have as many opportunities, okay, I'll give it to him. But he played the same amount of years as Tom did, and Tom made it to 7 and won 5. Come on, man.
All right. Well, no, I'll tell you what,
it's close.
What great theater though. And, and Tom Brady, I mean, another, you know, like, he's not like the, you know, great looking guy, cool guy, handled the whole thing with, Roger Goodell, you know, with class.
Oh yeah.
And then he's got the hottest chick in the building going crazy for him.
Yeah.
You're like,
yeah,
okay.
Oh, yeah.
Make it stop, please. Is enough enough, really?
No, there was a lot of storylines. His mom, you know, and all that. It all came together. It was crazy.
Tell me about, I want to talk a little bit about special ops and the way we do stuff. explain to everybody the agreements we have with different nations in order to conduct operations. We're really not there on the ground. Who negotiates those PEZs and how do they happen? Is it the State Department? Is it the DOD? Are you familiar with how those things get put together?
Well, yeah, it's at the highest level, obviously. You know, the State Department, other agencies, and then obviously DOD is involved, and then, you know, Special Operations Command. But a lot of that's at the, you know, higher level, so to speak. But agreements are made, you know, for our government to conduct activities, you know, in countries. And, you know, sometimes it's just our forces, sometimes it's in concert with the host government, you know, most often in some way, shape, or fashion, you know. But, yeah, those are definitely work at the highest level, starting with the Department of State, and worked on through all levels, down through, obviously, SOCOM.
All right. And then so as an operator or part of an operations group that is going to be employed there, the parameters of what you can do and how and some of how you do it would be laid out. Anything they specify would be laid out in that agreement.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. And then any kind of operations, obviously, in the more sensitive places, go all the way to the top, you know, for approval and so forth. Nothing happens without some kind of executive level approval.
Got
you know, outside the wire, so to speak.
Okay. All right. So when you read a headline, first of all, sometimes civilians get killed. Sometimes these things get messy, and I want to talk a little bit about the ROE that we operate. Normally, you know, sparing of human life is at the top of our list relative to when we do business and there's innocent civilians around. However, when our force is at risk, the rules of engagement allow us to use the minimum force necessary to save our whether they be Marines, soldiers, sailors, or airmen, that are fighting. Talk to us about that piece, and then, you know, the difficulty of the special operations community has in terms of operating a lot of times in close proximity to civilians.
Yeah, well, first off, I can't talk to the specific
ROE
in this case, but what I can do, you know, take a step back, and just from my experience is, I think I've said this before, the tremendous amount of effort that is put into place to keep eyes on the target, not only for the target, but also to address collateral damage, to watch for civilians, to, you know, try to limit that to the greatest extent possible. It goes, and all this goes through legal channels in terms of how we do it. And I think if the American public knew the amount of time and effort that's put into preventing civilian casualties, and often targets, bad guys, bad targets, are waved off because we just cannot guarantee or cannot get to the level that we want, the minimizing the civilian casualties. If the amount of people knew the amount of times we waved off, they'd be quite surprised.
Yeah, I agree with you, Pez. I mean, I think a lot of times people see operations and they kind of, you know, they don't understand, or they put their hands up in the air. But I think that I agree with you. If people knew the number of times that you looked at it and people shake their heads and say, no, it's too tight, you know, the juice. And again, and they're bad guys, and you want to kill or capture them because that helps.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to wave off.
Absolutely.
You have to wave off because it's simply the juice isn't going to be worth the squeeze.
Yeah, and I think the other part is, you know, and the problem with the war is we're conducting it is without, now in many places we have human intelligence on the ground. We have eyes and ears, but not to the level that we really need it. And that's just so critical because you can only see so much from a drone. You can only hear so much, but it's the person on the ground. It's the the assets on the ground that can really let us know what's happening. And I just think in some of these places it's so limited that we do have to, that's a risk we have to take. And we just don't, we haven't been able to build those forces, build those connections. Now, there are some, but it's very difficult. Even in some parts of Afghanistan, it's very, very difficult because we don't have forces on the ground. We don't have, you know, the assets. We don't have the agencies. We don't have the, you know, and a lot of times it's just like in Afghanistan. It's not even military or security. You get getting the development people there, getting people there, getting people that are on our side that are things that are good, you know, that creates a better condition. But again, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but that's the human intelligence part is so important. And a lot of times we don't have it. So we're just dealing with the other intelligence capabilities to let us know what's on the ground, where the civilians are, where the bad guys are. So,
I want to, this is kind of an experience question, but oftentimes the host government is in, walks a fine line between what they allow us to do, and then also when something does go wrong, standing up to the United States, and you know, and not wanting to look like you know, the United States is dragging them around, and you know they're insensitive to their own people and their own casualties, so. So there is a certain amount of, I don't know what I would call it, Pez, and the word that's popping into my mind is theatrics, but it's probably a poor choice of words. And I just give you examples. I think that we saw in Al Anbar, you turn the camera on in Ramadi or Fallujah, and you know you're going to hear, you know, America needs to leave and death to America and blah 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 blah. As soon as the camera goes off, it's like, okay, where were we? Now, the electricity. The power. And it's like, no, you know, we have to do that. I mean, if I go on TV and say the wrong thing, I mean, I'll have a bullet in my head by tomorrow morning. You know, so I mean, yeah. talk about that dilemma that a host nation finds itself in.
Oh, it is. You've described it, but it's an information cycle. And a lot of times the enemy has a quicker information cycle, and they can take like civilian casualties, and they can get it out there, you know, immediately because they're ready, and they don't have the bureaucratic hurdles to go through to let information out. And the information gets out, they show the bodies, and here's the Americans killing, you know, whether it's the Afghan civilians or whatever. I can say, I have to be careful here, but there are. Afghanistan, we really made some dramatic improvements in terms of communicating with the highest levels of the government on operations. So there was no surprise. So that when the operation happened, we had the lines of communication open. So if something bad happened, that immediately the highest level would know. So at least, you know, there wasn't this bureaucratic, you know, delay in terms of doing an operation that they didn't know about. Now this, here's the details. We really tried to open and make more transparent that piece, which I think was quite successful in terms of it didn't totally alleviate the comments like you brought up, because some of those are just all political theatrics that they have to do. But inside the house, the limiting of surprises for those chief executives, you know, was done. I think was dramatically reduced the surprises at the, you know, the highest level when operations were going on, and that was done in a number of different software formations I worked with, and I think it was quite successful. Now that's when you have a government. When you have no government, then it gets a government in dispute, then it becomes very difficult and a very, that's a totally different ball of action.
Explain that a little bit, if you will. So, you know, just like our government, if it's contested, if it's not a strong government, a strong, stable government, Obviously, mm-hmm. they are more susceptible to bad news being used okay. as a leverage against them in the next election or something, you know, and a lot of times over there to overthrow the government.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, you look at, you know, what's the situation in Libya and Somalia and Yemen. That's a very, very difficult, you know, situation. And I think we just, because of that, we're just obviously a lot more careful with the, you know, with the operations that happen there. But I think it's at the diplomatic level, you know, we just need to be as open as we can, again, to prevent the surprises and to understand both the military situation, but the political situation, and understand just the risks that go into, you know, taking the operation and, you know, foreseeing it. If something goes bad, how bad can it be, and how bad is that going to affect that government? Like I said, you don't want it to cause a change in government, but you want to just continue to do it. But it's certainly a more difficult in those failing states to do it.
My guest, the retired Marine Colonel Michael Pezzanola, a Patriots fan, a Red Sox fan, a Bruin fan, a Celtic fan, yada 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 yada. we're talking news today. Email for you. Hey Mac, interesting discussion this morning. my question or comment really is: a lot of times these nations are between two rocks. One, they know they need our help because the group that we're attacking is a threat to them as a sovereign government in whatever precarious position they find themselves in. If they do nothing, that group may overthrow them. If they do something and it does go wrong, they may be overthrown by another element within their government, albeit a minority faction or the party that's out of power at the time. It is certainly a precarious situation. Many times in the region, I think we've all seen it, the first call that gets made by the ruling party is to whoever is running the cell, be it Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and they cut a deal. Hey, we will look the other way. You can operate. Just don't bother us. Pez, your thoughts on that? Is that pretty much the way it goes?
Oh, I think so. You know, I think the way that the email, you know, describes the situation, I think that's absolutely, you know, they are between, a rock and a hard place in terms of how they're doing it. So they're walking that fine line. And like I said, you know, I think our position, you know, in being as transparent as we can with what we're doing and how we're doing it and opening up the lines of communications, I think helps. But yeah, you got to understand the history. Like everywhere, I've done a lot of, you know, study. I'm by no means an expert on Afghanistan, but you just look at the history of how, you know, of the conflicts that the Afghan people have been through, of the different tribes, and just how they all work. They work that way because that's the way they've had to survive. And I always get a little upset when people call it corruption or this and that. It's not corruption. It's survival. It's survival to take care of their people the best way that they can.
Yeah, and let me tell you, if you don't think it's gone on at the ports of entry here in the United States, be it at Tijuana, be it in New Jersey, let me tell you, there's a whole people. And I remember seeing it, you know, in Ramadi. The first in 2004, you know, and we had the same discussion about corruption. It's like, wait a minute, man, they're trying to survive. So how do they survive? They've got, you know, they've got Al-Qaeda here. They've got us here. Pick up the phone. Hey, look, you know, we're okay with you. Okay. I've got the Americans breathing down my back and I will tell you whatever they tell me. You know that, you know, just, we all need to get, We all need the. I've got this tiger by the tail, and all I'm trying to do is survive because I didn't invite either one of these jackasses into Ramadi. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be the police chief.
Yeah, and that's what they need to do. And once we get to the point where you just accept that, you don't. and accept that this is how things work, then I think we're in a better position to move forward. And again, we're not going to make freaking, you know, Afghanistan, Switzerland, or, you know, whatever, but it's going to have the culture, it's going to have the dynamics, it's going to have the things. We just want them to be, you know, on our side, not allowing some of those radical elements, like in Afghanistan, the radical, you know, the elements of Taliban to take over, because then, you know, we no longer have influence there. And again, it has that snowball effect. So I think you described, you know, absolutely, you know, what happened in Ramadi, what happens in Kandahar, what happens in Kabul, what happens up north. It's all much the same, you know, within their own culture, how those cultures work, how those cultures have developed over the years.
You know, and some of the...
And understand that that's so critical, you know.
And you know, and I'll tell you what, it takes a while for you to be there long enough to understand. And then when you arrest the police chief, he's the happiest guy in the world. Oh, thank God, man. I've been dancing on this razor's head for what, 3 years now? Thank you. And I get to go to, will you put me in one of your jails? Yeah, that's where you're going. Oh, praise Allah.
Thank you.
Inshallah. It's Allah's, it's Allah's will. Today is my family's so happy today. Because they're out of danger. They're out of danger now. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, it's just not to the guy. But that's the situation that these countries, these officials find themselves in, when in these contested parts of the world, because,
on the special operations side, you know, I saw this in that, you know, over the years, because so many of the same leaders deployed to the same areas, that real relationships were built. They may have gone away for a year or two, but they come back. They may have been there as a major, as a back as a kind of colonel as a general. So there were these, you know, relationships that built. And it was good to see, because it was on both sides in the understanding. The problem is, I think the larger military complex couldn't do that. So you had that, you know, fighting a war 1 year at a time. And I think if we ever go into something like this, we really need to figure this out and to get, you know, to get the war fighters to have that cultural understanding, you know, much like, you know, and the British were pretty successful, you know, in some of the ways that they executed, in terms of having their military truly understand the culture. Sometimes it went too far, but, you know, I think that there's some value in that in our military. How do we do that so that we don't go into these problems, you know, stone cold, you know, and not really understand the dynamics of how does that society run? And how am I going to be there? We had some great leaders, but I think a lot of times they went in.
No, they
didn't. Very,
yeah,
very thin.
With our American eyeballs and not with another side, which is critical. All right, Pez, we've got to take about a 2 minute break. When we come back, okay. I've got a couple more news questions to ask you. My guest today, retired Marine Colonel Mike Pezzola. He from the great state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and he with the rest of them on Cloud 9 today. So we're going to take a quick break. More of All New England Patriot Radio coming up next.
War.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Bolasoff Foundation has resources when it comes to...
Did you know there's another way to take Viagra
to CEO in conversation. How to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the GlobalSoft website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The GlobalSoft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
That's right. The college football segment continues. Talking pro football, Mike Pesnola. Our guest, retired Marine Colonel, infantry officer. Pez and I served together at the basic school with a lot of great guys. And Pez, I was fascinated by Pez. One, that he was an angry human being. Two, that he was a hockey player. And I had been a hockey fan my whole life. And another friend of ours by the name of John Carper, he's Carp from North Carolina. He played hockey. And so we spent a lot of time talking. I started playing ice hockey at Fairfax Ice Arena. I'd never played before, and so I started going to like open skate. And Carver would tell me, "Hey man, just go play. You know, you played baseball, you played football, you can do it." And let me tell you, Pez, I had the best time playing senior hockey as a novice. Because you know what? I didn't have anything to compare it to. It's not like you know, you're playing now and like somebody shoots a puck past you. You're like, man, I used to make that stop, no problem. I had none of that baggage. So when I made a move, yeah, boom, it was on.
It was awesome.
It was the best. Let me ask you a general news question. What is your take on this, my opinion, it's grown tiresome, this daily dance that we do between the Trump administration, the media, and give me your thoughts on all of that. Do you see it ending time? Are we going to have 4 years of this?
I don't know. You know, it has grown tiresome. It's almost, I just want to say, and you know, I kind of liken it back to when President Obama first came in. You know, okay, now the Republicans lost. The Democrats had the White House. And I think there was some obstruction. But this is to a new level, I think. And I just wish they'd just, you know, get off. First off, understand he's the elected president of the United States. That doesn't mean you don't oppose him, but just work with the administration. And when there's something you disagree with, fight it. But it's almost every day. It's just this. The world is ending. You know, I'll use an example of the education secretary.
Right.
Now, that wasn't. You know, I'm kind of on the fence on whether or not she should have been or shouldn't have been. But she was. She's now the education secretary. Is she the best? No. But you know, you got to understand that's, I think, how President Trump is. He puts people in positions to challenge the system, you know. And now she's in a position. And I saw this article that was an angry article about her being confirmed as the education secretary, and it talked about what we need to do. We need to make our voice heard. We need to be on the school committee, find out the issues, you know, and fight for them. Hey, that's good. You know, if you put a education secretary that was just, you know, had some experience, wasn't very controversial, would that kind of base have been energized? So I think on a lot of the things. Trump just wants to challenge the status quo, and he wants to really shake up the system. And that's why I think he's put in some of the people he has. And again, it's not, and once people understand that, fine, all right? And, you know, and I used the example of NATO. He called NATO obsolete. I'm a fan of NATO. I think we need NATO in different ways, different forms maybe. But by calling it obsolete, it forced NATO on the defensive to have to kind of look inward and understand, hey, wait a minute, what's he saying? Are we obsolete? He's accomplished his mission. He doesn't want NATO to go away. He just wants to make people have to be accountable to stand up and say, hey, you know, we are not obsolete. This is why. Rather than just accepting the status quo. Okay, I'm the president of the United States. NATO is fine and dandy. No, it's not. It's got some warts. It's got some problems that need to get addressed, and so forth. It's the technique of leadership, I think, that he has. Like it or not, understand that, and then just move on. So that's kind of my soapbox on that, I think. You know, I don't agree with everything he says or every tweet that goes out, but, man, you know, it is, he's the president.
You're right about that. I wish he would, you know, get about the business of governing. And, I think like a lot of people, very frustrating, in terms of, like this, in my opinion, the self-inflicted gunshot wounds of the you know, the size of the crowd at the inauguration. Like, why are you wasting capital on that nonsense?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? And again, now, this is not the campaign where you're one of five anymore, or even one of two. Mm-hmm. Every word that you say is going to be dissected, and when you want to throw out hyperbole and political speak, it's going to be dissected, and you're going to be discredited. And so I wish you would, you know. But it's just like the pitch of it is it's so shrill and so rough. All right. Is there any? Yeah. Let me ask you the general question. Anything that's on your mind that I haven't teed up for you on this Wednesday?
Well, Russia. You know, you say that, or you know, the president's interview. Again, it kind of disturbed me there. You know. I don't think the president is going to cow down at Russia, but I think it's much like I just said before. He's being provocative in terms of, I think he wants to see what he can do with Russia. Russia's bad, but there's a time to demonize and there's a time to just, hey, get the business. And like you said, I think he wants to get the business. And I think maybe the business of governance is going to come. I think this is a shockwave, I think a purposeful shockwave of executive orders to kind of shake up the system. And I think the jury's still out. We'll see what happens with the governance piece, you know, once things hopefully settle down. And hopefully he kind of tones down or just becomes more, less tone deaf to the impact of his words, I think.
All right. So you have hope. I'm just, you know, it's like, come on, man. Let's get, you know how, because, yeah, well, you know how when you're problem solving, you're sitting in meetings and you're trying to solve and you listen to guys talk at meetings, you're like, okay, he's not an adult, she's not an adult. And then somebody starts making sense and you're like, I don't know who that guy, but he's going to be part of the solution because he speaks in the complete, scope of the problem. He seems to be a smart guy. He's open to other people's criticism. Like, okay, he's an adult. And so to me, it's like, we're the adults in the meeting.
Absolutely.
And we know two of them are up there, you know, and they've operated like adults, Kelly and Mattis. I mean, Kelly, you know, has been, you know, taking gunshots for the way that whole order got rolled out. And I'm sure it wasn't his doing. Were it his doing, that thing would have been a little bit tighter. So just interesting, and so just hoping we get there sooner rather than later. So
absolutely. All right.
Pez, first of all, I want to thank you for doing this morning. I hope you don't mind
hey, no problem.
If I bug you to talk about the news on occasion. Especially,
no problem, man.
Especially when you're gloating about your Patriots.
It was. I'm still up there, man.
Yeah, no, well, you should be, man. One of the greatest football games played. Certainly one of the greatest championship games and incredible national theater simply based on the comeback. You know, simply based on the comeback. What are your final question? Do you think the NFL should change its the coin flip over time? Should both?
Absolutely not.
when they win a coin toss, it's
just
like
goes,
this is over.
That's the rules, man. Like, what are they gonna do?
Suck it up.
Wrestle on them.
Right. I'd like to see both teams touch the ball, and then settle it from there.
Yeah.
I'm not a revisionist. Those are the rules. But when that thing, and you knew it was going to come up for the Patriots, because God was on their side.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, man. Thanks for the visit.
All right, brother. Great.
There you have it. Michael Pesnola. He from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts there on Cloud 9. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Dennis Simpson is going to join us. Dennis is part of an organization called the Focus Marines Foundation, and they help Marines transitioning. And so we're going to talk to him next. They specialize in helping guys who are struggling transition and work a lot with the Wounded Warrior Regiments and other support groups like that. So we'll talk to Dennis. He a former sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. So on this Wednesday, hump day, don't go anywhere.